yonder. What's over there, yonder? Well, it might just be Arbor Labor Union, one of the most exciting and progressive punk country bands in the world. Now, if that sounds a little confusing to you, imagine this. The Grateful Dead as covered by the Minutemen. That still unravels and unfurls wondrous guitar solos, cosmic explorations, and a giddy sense of optimism. We interviewed Arbor Labor Union here on the 2010s.
I think the first thing that kind of really caught my ear is that there'll be these sudden tempo changes, or even, you know, rhythmic or time signature changes. Hovering Stone from the very opening has this, where the kind of drums shift into a different gear and it changes the feeling of the song a little bit. I was wondering, that happens a couple times. Tonight's Moving Picture has that as well. I'm wondering where that kind of came from, if that's just something playful that happened in the studio, or if you kind of wanted to challenge yourselves with some of these tempo changes.
That's a good question. I feel like drummer Brian, so we got two Brians in the band. Drummer Brian would probably say that he was, I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think it's, I wish he was here, but I don't think it's super deliberately planned. I think when we just kind of play, things like that begin to happen. And then it sounds, I mean, and then we're into it and it's like, yeah, that's cool. Let's keep it like that, you know?
Yeah, almost like anything that tricks us first off, and then we can kind of find our way into making it sound really groovy is really fun too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or a rhythm that you might not expect to a riff is always kind of exciting to hear. So that's probably where that would make it come from.
I feel like we like keeping the music sounding kind of playful.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a part of it is, you know, like having little surprises like that.
Do they start as surprises for you?
I actually remember the first time he did that in Hovering Stone, and I like just began smiling because it sounded so good to me when I first heard it happen.
Like the boogie beat?
Like when he went into from the fast beat to like the straight.
Oh, like, right.
Yeah.
I didn't even pick up on it for a long time, actually.
So. I was like, whoa, that's cool. I like that.
But yeah, I think we were mostly just like jam, you know, whatever happens. And then we try and repeat something if we liked it a lot. But sometimes by the end of the jam of the thing, we can't remember what we just did. So
I think that it's like you hammer out an idea and then it just over and over until something kind of settles, like falls until you're like, okay, I guess that's the song.
I should have asked earlier, but if you two could introduce yourselves just so listeners could put names to the voices, that would be great.
I'm Brian with an I, and I play guitar.
I'm Bo with an O, and I also play guitar, and Brian sings and I sing too.
Awesome. And we also have, I'm Rob, but I'm sitting here on the side. Just listen.
Rob plays the bass and he recorded the album.
Awesome. Hi, Rob. Cool. One of the things you were talking about jamming just then, one of the things that kind of impressed me about this album is that it's very tight. There's only two songs that are over 4 minutes long, and a lot of these will just introduce hooks, immediately go forward, and it's just very concise and compact. And sometimes that doesn't happen with music that comes from jamming, because jamming can tend to be long and weighted and kind of sprawl out. How was the editing process of getting these songs down into their final forms like for y'all?
I feel like we write things structured, but then we have places where we're allowed to stretch out almost.
Yeah.
And then, so like the songs are almost blueprints for places where we are now exploring more and more on certain regions of the song and then try and find our way back to the song or something. I don't know if that answers the question very well, but what were you going to say?
Well, I think we kind of had it in our heads that we wanted to kind of do an album that had like a lot of shorter songs. So that was like, hit you with this song, hit you with that song. And then I think it maybe partially also comes from like, we all like rock and roll, but we also like and have played in punk bands, which like, you know, like faster punk bands can get good at being like fast and tight. And so I think there's a little bit of a blend between those two things, maybe.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fast and tight, loose and groovy.
Yeah. Like live, like we'll stretch out the songs live that are on the record. But
as you've been playing live, has anything taken off in terms of something that was on album now feels different live, or is just the most fun to play live?
Yeah, but not necessarily off of this album. We've been stretching out here and there with a song off the last record. Pretty fun in a fun way. The song Highway Tape Loop. And then mostly in practice, we've been blasting off pretty hard on some songs, but we're trying to incorporate that more into the live setting.
We've messed around a little bit with like transitions, like with Forevergreen and Yonder and Forevergreen.
Yeah, more like stringing stuff together. Yeah, it's been really fun.
Nice. You had talked about playfulness earlier, and Shadow Hat was, I think, the first song I kind of came across. And you have a video that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, especially when compared to the video for Yonder, which is so colorful, both in your, you know, outfits and also just the visuals around you. And Shadow Hat looks like a metal video, but it's very much not. And I was wondering about that combination on the writing of Shadow Hat, both lyrically and musically, of that combination of darkness, but also definitely some cheekiness there as well.
I feel like, not to get heady, but darkness is also pretty playful. Shadow Hat is the song has kind of been around since like probably 2015. And then I've like recorded a version of it, and then we kind of kicked it around with the band for a while, but the lyrics have kind of always been changing a little bit. But then when they kind of got solidified, there's some serious messaging to it in a way that's there, but at the same time, I feel like it had to be playful. I don't know. Maybe that's just my own spirit and the thing, but, yeah, I feel like it had to be playful. Like darkness would be playful. And the video, we shot both of those videos in one day. So it was kind of a crazy day. We shot the Yonder video during the day and the Shadow Hat video that night. We didn't really have much of a plan for the Shadow Hat video, but there was sort of, I think,
kind of a little bit of a vision.
Yeah. And that they would kind of go into each other. There'd be a two-parter. I don't know if that really came across as well. It's hard to maybe present that on YouTube. But, yeah.
They're kind of flip sides of a coin. Shadow Hat is indoors, but still showing a little bit of nature with the Daddy Long Legs going around. All of you guys are in black. It's in black and white as compared to Yonder, which is outside, spacious. All of you guys have different, you know, colored outfits on, and there's definitely kind of a way larger palette of things going on as well.
Yeah, I guess I could say that Shadow Hat is definitely the internal, where Yonder would be the external experience, right?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, on a lyrical front, Yonder was also, I just really enjoy how the lyrics seem to revel in the idea of Yonder not being specific. It's over yonder, you know, you're just going to have to keep going. It's almost that the experience is the journey, not the destination. Is that a little bit of what the thematic, you know, telling was there?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I've always, you know, we're from the South. You're from South area. It's just, it's a term of, you know, grew up with, and I always understood it. I feel like I understood it before I even thought about it, right? Just further, just a little bit further or something. And then, yeah, there's no specific destination or distance. It's just got to keep going. And that feels pretty, it felt poignant. I mean, we wrote that song was probably, I think we wrote that song right after the last record. And it kind of was always in my mind the anchor towards making something, an album around it, kind of that it would have company. Yeah, Yonder.
It's almost, it's aspirational in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. No specific distance.
Yeah, it was kind of a good it was almost like a good message for ourselves, like
Yeah.
keep going.
Yeah, for sure. For you two specifically, I think one of the things that impressed me the most about the album is the guitar interplay. Partially because it is, again, going back to that kind of idea of playfulness, there is this kind of really wonderful, like back and forth almost dialogue between your guitars. How long have you two played together, and how do you feel that your playing guitar with each other has evolved over time to now?
Well, I moved back to Atlanta in 2010, and in like 2009 I broke my leg and started to try and play guitar a little bit more serious, 'cause I knew I was gonna eventually move in with Brian, and he is a guitar shredder and my favorite guitar player ever, and I wanted to play guitar with him really bad. So when we moved back in, when we moved in with each other, I was like, we have to start a band. And we've done a couple things, but since, so we've been probably been playing guitar together since 2010-ish, right?
Yeah, probably like 10 years.
Yeah.
It's funny though, because when we first started the band, like I think we intentionally wanted to keep the guitars not too different from each other. And I think just
Yeah.
over time, naturally, it's hard to do that all the time.
Yeah. I
So
remember setting parameters in the beginning, being like,
yeah,
no
we
solos.
no guitar
Yeah, just
solos, and
like, and now we're
yeah.
very far from that. But it was good. It was almost like setting a limitation created something, and now we're like
Yeah, it
able to blast and,
yeah.
well, off of that, you know.
It helped us kind of have a blueprint for what the band was going to be, and then it's like once you have set rules for yourself, there's nothing more fun than like breaking them, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Let me be a little naughty right here's a little
But
solo. You know.
I think, and we both have very different styles of playing. And I think that's what makes it fun for us to play with each other, is to try and understand, you know, like we'll introduce riffs and have to get our heads around them a little bit, and then it becomes kind of like a fun obstacle to be like, how can, you know, like how can you add something that improves this or whatnot. I like to find a harmony if I can, just to have that in my pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
You always find the harmony, buddy.
was there any, you were talking about kind of this hurdle that was fun to get over. Was there anything on the album that you felt like was a fun challenge for yourself?
Yeah, like, well, you want
No, I was gonna say it was so easy.
to It was, yeah, but you know, like, I mean, like, I didn't understand the Hovering Stone riff at first, you know, until I started to hear it. And then I was like, oh, okay, I get it, you
Yeah, once
know?
it was placed with the melody, I felt like
Yeah.
it was like, oh, okay, that's what that is.
And I will also say, like, one thing that I like think that we've also learned somehow, like, I feel like it's like one of my favorite riffs that Bo has written is this riff for an older song called Chop and Block. And it's because there's like a sense of humor to it that I really like. And I think that your playing has kind of caused me to try and find that sort of
Nice.
like write something that you like, but that also has, like, going back to the term playful, but, like, sort of this, like, comedy element to it, you know? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no doubt.
What was it called again? Divine Comedy?
Yeah, Divine Comedy Rock. Yeah, I don't remember. The hardest part, I think, about recording is that we did it in, like, 1 and 2 days. 1 day and 2 days? Two, and then Rob was kind of doing double duty of, like, engineering it and playing on it, which was crazy. But it worked out. We were pretty tight by then, so it kind of, there was not too many mysteries to uncover in the studio, it seemed like.
So you recorded both music videos in 1 day. You did the whole album in 1 or 2 days.
Yeah.
Is there a ticking clock on all this that you felt?
No, we're just busy boys. We're just trying to make as much out of, I think, the time that we have together when we can all get together.
Feels urgent.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, it was fun to the recording. We recorded at Georgia State, which is like the local college down here, and Rob had gotten access to it, and we kind of like put all our gear in an elevator and like went up. It was just, I didn't go to college, so it was like fun to feel like we were sneaking into school to like record a really weird rock and roll album over the weekend. It was really fun. Yeah, good time. Yeah.
I mean, going on to what seems to keep being popping up, playfulness and humor. I really like the sentiment and also just the word undoomed. I think, like, in terms of positivity and almost preaching, it felt like to me, my, you know, take on it of just like the people will become undoomed, of like this positive way of looking at the world, but this very bombastic way of doing it, especially because of your vocal work, Bo, which almost feels preacher-like. And I was just wondering about your lyrical and vocal delivery on that song, where it came from.
Well, I stole the word undoomed from E.E. Cummings. I was reading some of his poems, and he said, I don't remember what poem it was now, but he said something about our great undoom. And I was like, oh, what a good turn of that word. And so I just wrote it down, and then the whole poem kind of came out. And this was like probably 2019, before the still quite a doomed world, but not as doomed as it would become. At least how, you know, many things have felt that way since then. So it felt interesting to me that there's almost power in flipping the word. And then also making it almost confrontational, because it does almost seem like, wait, which is it? So hopefully it makes somebody think that way, because it made me think that way when I stole it from E.E. Cummings.
Thank you, E.E. Cummings.
Yeah.
He's
pretty good. I don't love it all, but I mean,
On the definitely non-lyrical side, I was wondering about where the genesis of these shorter instrumental songs, American Spoon and Rain Barrel Tap, came from.
Oh, that's Birdman. Let him know.
Yeah, those are just ideas I'd kind of come up with, like, playing at my place, just playing guitar, just always kind of, like, coming up with little ideas. And I don't know. I just, Spoon, I try not to be this way, but Spoon was something I kind of already had like mapped out in my head. I don't know if, so I think we kind of just like jammed on it one practice, and that was like kind of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, same with the Rain Barrel Tap thing, was actually that chord progression is the same chord progression as the chorus of Remember to Water Your Head. So I kind of like imagined it either being before or after that song, but it's nice to have little, I think we've always appreciated albums that have these little like quick little interludes that can kind of get stuck in your head, and they like happen real fast, and then like it's like you almost forget that was a song until it pops up in your head again.
Yeah,
sometime later.
Also creates like a just a world in a record that I always come back to on records that have those kind of things. And American Spoon was written on a box inside the studio when we were looking for a song title for it. I was like, that's it.
Yeah, and also that song is definitely inspired by like some like just to be honest, like some like CCR instrumental, like deeper cuts.
Yeah,
like we
even like Thin Lizzy, they would do that, you know, just put these rocking interludes, and you're like, oh yeah, it makes you remember that a band just likes to rock.
Yeah.
I like that found object song title. Just point at a thing in the studio and go like, all right, that's the title.
It just kept haunting me from the corner. It said American Spoon. I think it's a candle company, but it also, if you think about it, it could be, I don't know, it could be a lot of things, right? So there it is.
Yeah.
That's an exclusive, a 2010s exclusive.
The 2010s exclusive of America.
Matter of fact, all this is.
I was, this is more on the another different side of the art, which is cover art, both on New Pedal Instance and on Yonder. You've got who I have started simply referring to as the labor man on the cover. And I'm just wondering where's he from? What's his story?
Oh, God. I don't know.
What's
okay,
his real name?
I can't tell you. I can't put him on blast. I think so. I draw a lot, and it's just a character I kind of made up, and it seems like it's become an avatar, at least for the last two. I don't know why or how, but after I drew the New Pedal one, and then we wrote Yonder, I kept drawing this guy, and Labor Man. And then I don't know, who knows if he'll reappear, but it seemed like he was on the same path but maybe going a different direction a little bit later, and the music kind of felt that way to me, that it was a continuation from New Pedal, same path but darker. It seems to be evening on the second cover of Yonder, and it just seemed to attach itself together in a way. Yeah,
I like him.
Yeah. Yeah, I've drawn some like comics and stuff with him. The character's name is Beau Soleil, which is like, I guess, an avatar for myself in a way, which feels weird to admit. But and then he's got this brother, and they're kind of looking for each other, but they haven't found each other yet, at least in the visual world of it. But I think they look good on the record.
You guys had just talked about kind of the wider universe or world that an album may create because of interstitial tracks or sort of themes that bounce off of each other within title tracks. Do you ever think about the wider world of what y'all have created in terms of not just album to album, but you have music videos, you have Beau Soleil, you know, all this? Is this what, you know, if you were going to describe the Arbor Labor Union universe to someone, what's it looking like?
Whoa. I feel that's a hard one. I would just hope that it was enticing enough that somebody would explore it on their own and make their own conclusions about it. Because that's what I think the hope would be, that of making such a world, is that it would be immediately understood upon participation with it. Hard to describe, but easy to enjoy. Hopefully.
I can get behind that for sure.
Yeah.
Also, this is a toss off, but it's funny that you guys have a song called Killing Time, and earlier, like we said, recorded the album in a day and the music videos in a day. I feel like the laziness of Killing Time is false, you know, a little bit false there in comparison to the work y'all do.
Good.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I feel like those lyrics are like, yeah, just kind of describing what it's like when we're not doing that, you know?
Yeah, I was also more thinking about like literally murdering time of it entirely. That's sort of where I was.
Really?
Yeah. Like murdering it. No more time.
Yeah, we're going non-metaphorical with this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, or like at least it's good to be in a position where you don't have to think about time so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That seems to be when you're least stressed. You're just enjoying yourself, enjoying life.
Also, I think I wrote that when I was hoping to be able to kill some time, but I wasn't able to, you know? Yeah. And so like making the song was like a way to feel like I actually was, even though I felt busy.
This is my last proper one. I think my favorite song on the record is Tonight's Moving Picture. And I think it kind of surprised me, not that the rest of the album doesn't have really beautiful moments, but that whole song is just so pretty. And I was wondering, lyrically and musically, how did y'all envision closing the album, and why did you take a point that was a little less rock out, chugalin, and more along the lines of something really kind of beautiful and reflective?
I think when we were jamming on that song for a while, but didn't have like an ending to it, I didn't think. And then when we kind of came up to that ending, I remember when we played it at practice, we all just kind of busted out laughing because it felt like it hit really hard in like a really nice way. And it just seemed to me to be a cool ender. Our last record kind of ended with this meandering thing, and it felt like maybe it could mimic that in a way. The song came first, actually, it makes me feel crazy saying it, but a drawing. I drew like a drawing of a window with a scene happening inside the window, and it had like boots on. And I wrote Tonight's Moving Picture. I wrote the first line of the song underneath it. And then when I wrote and came up with like the riff, I'd always wished to maybe explore what that moving window would be seeing lyrically or as more drawings or a poem or something. And so strumming that riff when it happened, it felt fitting to that drawing, which came back to my mind. And then I just was thinking about how our eyes are these windows, and we close our eyes every night, and dreams happen on these windows of our eyes at night, and how that's the moving picture we turn into every night. Yeah, that's, I don't know. That's where it came from.
Yeah. I would also, like, going back to the previous question about the art and stuff, like, I also think of the last record as like a day record, and this one as a nighttime record.
Definitely.
Kind of like, I don't like, yeah, like James Joyce would say, like, Ulysses was his day book or day novel, and like Finnegan's Wake was his nighttime novel. So it was harder. That's why it's harder to read or whatever. But also tonight, yeah, like tonight's moving picture, it's like nighttime. It seems like a good closer. And the fact that it's just calmer, I don't know. I like that contrast too. It feels like a curtain closing.
Yeah,
type of thing.
The bookend of it with Hovering Stone, it's like opposite energies.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You start your day with a little coffee, you end your night with some sleepy time tea, and you close your eyes.
And you have the moving picture.
Exactly. Yeah.